Good morning, and welcome to the Prescott Daily Courier. This is your volunteer programmer, Barbara Felix, from the Sun Sounds of Arizona Studios. Today, I'll be reading articles dated April the 8th, 2026. And here are your headlines. Historic Cortez Street building to be remodeled for retail and vacation rentals. PUSD board approves bond issue override for November ballot. And student arrested after igniting Granite Gardens trailhead brush fire. And here are your details. Historic Cortez Street building to be remodeled for retail and vacation rentals by Brody Green. One vacant historic building in downtown Prescott is one step closer to being remodeled after the Council Subcommittee on Water Issues approved a water service application for a mixed-use project, though new questions have emerged about plans to use the upper floors for short-term rental units. The subcommittee, consisting of the mayor and two members of the city council, unanimously voted to move forward the water service application on Tuesday, April the 7th. The developer behind the project is Prescott-based firm Michael Taylor Architects. According to the council memo, the plan is to have a 3,000-square-foot retail space on the first floor with six apartments on the second and third floors, and a residential unit on the fourth floor. The property, an historic three-floor building located at 130 North Cortez Street, currently sits vacant with boards on the windows and doors. A canvas sign out front says, "Coming soon." "I'm just really happy to see this old building coming to life," Mayor Kathy Rusing said. "It's the old racquetball court, and I don't think it's had any racquetball, had anything going on there for like 30 years or something. It sounds like a really good infill project." The firm submitted a project narrative on July 9th, 2025, that explained the project is an adaptive restoration of the building, which was originally constructed in 1893. The first, second, and third floors will be replaced, and the roof will be removed to construct a new fourth floor. Colin Lodvall, principal architect at Michael Taylor Architects, said that the second and third floors will each have three short-term rentals, with the addition of a fourth floor to serve as a residence for the building owner. Lois Frewirth, who was on the council when the project went in front of the city council on October 14th, 2025, for a special use permit, asked Lodvall when they decided to make the apartments short-term rentals. "I thought when I was part of the October meeting that these were apartments on the second and third floor. Now you're saying short-term rentals," Frewirth said. "Why has it changed? Or did I not understand it back in October?" Lodvall responded that it was always the intent to use the property for short-term rentals. The name was originally going back all the way to the original building. It was an apartment building, and so they're still using the old name as part of the name for the project, Lodvall said. "From the code standpoint, it's not an apartment. It's not a long-term stay." There is no mention in the October presentation that the apartments would be short-term rentals, but staff did say that the property was exempt from requiring the building to provide on-site parking. In a message, Frueworth reaffirmed that she was not aware of the intended use. I fully intend to now review all council materials and video to see if this was made crystal clear to the prior council, Frueworth said. Many of your questions should be directed to city staff, as I do not think parking requirements would be waived for overnight guests, but this now may be considered grandfathered with the special use permit already approved. Tammy DeWitt, who presented the project to the council in the fall, said she did not know the intended use, but added that there is no law against the apartments being used as short-term rentals. The Daily Courier attempted to contact the property owner through his workplace and email, but did not receive a response as of press time. PUSD Board approves bond issue override for November ballot by John Foley. The Prescott Unified School District Governing Board voted to place override and bond issue measures on the November ballot at its meeting on Tuesday, April the 7th. Board members stressed that the request to voters is fiscally conservative, far less than what they would legally ask for to fund schools during challenging financial times. The resolutions approved by the board call for a $20 million bond issue and 7% override to help pay for teacher pay increases. Board member Brett Magnum said that the $20 million request was appropriate. I like being able to go out and tell people in the community that we are being very conservative with their money, he said. The $20 million, if approved by voters, would increase taxpayers' bills by about $25 a year, said Brian Moore, the district's chief financial officer. This is not sufficient, Moore said. It's what I think we could get our voters to say yes to. Moore said that the board could ask for a bond issue north of $400 million based on the assessed valuation of property in the district. Several board members said that they needed to balance what they could ask for with what they believe the voters would approve. The combination of the 7% override and the $20 million bond would cost Prescott taxpayers about $75 annually, or about $6.41 per month. The override money would be used to pay for a 5% pay increase for district teachers, Superintendent Clark Tenney said. Attorney Jim Guile advised the board on bonds and elections, said the next step would be to produce a voter information pamphlet. It's designed to be a one-stop shop for voter election information, Guile told the board members. The pamphlet would include information such as how much more taxes residents would pay, the bond schedule, and what money would be used for, Guile said. PUSD has many buildings in need of upgrades, along with various other infrastructure projects. Given those expensive projects, the $20 million, if approved, would not last especially long. Guile said it would last until the board next needs to ask for a bond issue, possibly sometime in the 2030s. Residents can submit arguments for and against the budget override until 5 p.m. on Friday, August the 7th, the resolution stated. PUSD has asked taxpayers for 4 overrides in recent years, and 2 have passed. The last one requested in 2020 failed to pass, with 55% of voters against the measure. A bond and override were approved in 2015 by significant margins. Student arrested after igniting Granite Gardens trailhead brush fire. A 22-year-old student from Louisiana was arrested Tuesday, April the 7th, for his alleged actions resulting in a brush fire at Granite Gardens trailhead in the Granite Dells. Just after 4 p.m. Tuesday, Yavapai County Sheriff's Forest Patrol and fire personnel responded to reports of smoke and discovered an active fire burning through cottonwood trees and debris along Granite Creek. The fire spanned roughly 100 feet by 50 feet and was spreading rapidly due to dry conditions. Central Arizona Fire and Medical Authority, along with Prescott Fire Department, responded immediately. Containment was aided by the fact that additional fire agencies were already nearby for a scheduled training drill. This response allowed crews to quickly surround the fire and begin mop-up operations. Investigation revealed that the student, who was participating in a rock climbing training group, was using a lighter to ignite the highly flammable, fluffy cottonwood seeds out of curiosity. The fire quickly grew beyond his control, creating the dangerous situation and backing up traffic on Highway 89. The suspect was arrested for reckless burning and endangerment. The sheriff's office is reminding the public that irresponsibly lighting fires is never an excuse and can have serious consequences for the community, visitors, and natural resources. YCSO thanked CAFMA and the Prescott Fire Department for their rapid response and work in extinguishing the flames before they could spread further. No evacuations were necessary as the result of the fire, but 20 people were ordered to shelter in place. You're listening to the Prescott Daily Courier from the studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds programming is directed to those who cannot use print material due to a disability. Listen to our live streams and learn how you can support us at the website sunsounds.org. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand from our website. Choose Broadcast Info and Audio, and then On Demand. Collaborative Care for Those in Crisis by Hava Herzog. In Prescott Valley, helping someone in crisis is a team effort, as police officers and mental health professionals work side by side to connect residents with the care that they need. The Prescott Valley Police Department, PVPD, expanded its Crisis Intervention Team, CIT, and Mental Health De-Escalation Training Program in mid-March. PVPD delivered multiple evidence-based crisis response trainings to enhance officers' ability to safely and effectively respond to individuals experiencing mental health crises. The program focused on strengthening mental health awareness, improving communication strategies, promoting officer resiliency, and safe de-escalation techniques. The expansion was made possible through funding provided by the U.S. Department of Justice Office of Community Orienting Police Services, or COPS Office, under the Safer Outcomes Initiative. Lieutenant Dan Hayes, a public information officer for PVPD, said all of PVPD's officers are trained in crisis intervention and de-escalation and receive annual training. "We take it very seriously," Hayes said. He said about 2.5 to 3 years ago, PVPD changed the way it taught about de-escalation and responding to people in crisis. He said that they are now better aligned with modern policing efforts involving de-escalation and crisis response. Hayes said one of the changes was teaching officers to slow down and not rush into anything with people in crisis. He said they teach them to take their time. "It's something that we do constantly. We train on it constantly. We work with several different local mental health providers to assist people with who possibly want to harm themselves, so we can get the best for these people and get them the help that they need," Hayes said. "Depending on the situation, it may be officers that respond to someone in crisis or Spectrum Healthcare's crisis mobile team. If they are able, a person in crisis can voluntarily go to the Polara Health Crisis Stabilization Unit, CSU, or an officer, or the crisis mobile team can drop them off." Deanna Etter, director of marketing at Polara Health, said the CSU is available to anyone in Yavapai County, not just Prescott Valley, where it is located. She said anyone could walk through the doors all year long. Our crisis unit is open, and we have crisis navigators there that are willing to help anyone. "Your crisis is your crisis, right?" Eder said. "We don't care what the crisis is, we're just there to help." The CSU officers' crisis assessment, nursing care, group therapy, psychiatric medication management, safety planning, discharge planning, and inpatient and outpatient services. She said it could be parents concerned about a child with suicidal ideation or someone in need of respite away from a home environment for a day. After someone is stabilized, Eder said they send people home with resources and safety plans. For first responders, Eder said that they are able to drop off people in crisis and allow the CSU to help from there. "We have a great relationship with first responders," Eder said. "Walking a person that is in a mental health crisis or behavioral health crisis into the emergency room is not always a good fit." According to educational materials available at Polara's website, various emotional signs, behavioral signs, physical signs, verbal signs, situational triggers, and social changes can point to a person in crisis. When addressing a person in crisis, Polara recommended creating a safe space, listen actively, do not argue or minimize the pain, be judgmental, and assess risk. If someone possesses an immediate risk to harm themselves or others, call 911. To reach the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline, call or text 988. To learn more about Polara Health, call 928-445-5211 or visit Polara, P-O-L-A-R-A, health.com. The CSU is located at 8655 East East Ridge Drive in Prescott Valley. Next, we'll turn to the features page of the Prescott Daily Courier, starting with Dear Annie by Annie Lane. Dear Annie, hopefully you can help me. I've read your column for years. My two kids are adults and have kids of their own, and they have always gotten along. However, last Thanksgiving, my son and his family decided not to stay when they found out my granddaughter was there. My granddaughter is gay and was recently married last fall to her partner. My son isn't religious at all, but he follows his wife's lead, and she is very Catholic. Both of them think that if they spend time with gay people, it will somehow hurt their children. They don't want to expose their kids to my granddaughter's lifestyle. I was crushed beyond belief, and my son and daughter have not spoken since. I don't know how to handle family gatherings. Do I invite them both, one or the other? How do people handle this? Signed, Troubled Mom. Dear Troubled Mom, what happened at your table was painful, but clarifying. Your granddaughter is not a lifestyle. She is your family. Her marriage deserves the same respect as anyone else's at the table. If your son and his wife cannot offer that basic decency, then the problem is not where to seat them, it's whether they should be there at all. You don't solve this by splitting the difference. You solve it by standing by what you believe. Tell your son without anger that they are welcome in your home, but only if they can treat one another with kindness and respect. It is not about punishing him. It is about protecting your granddaughter from being treated like she's something less than welcome at her own family table. Dear Annie, my coworker Lila and I started at our company the same month 5 years ago. We used to eat lunch together daily, but over the past year, she's become increasingly competitive. She withholds information on shared projects, forgets to copy me on emails, and recently presented one of my ideas in a meeting without mentioning my name. Last week, when our boss was praised the project, Lila smiled and said it was a team effort, but never acknowledged me directly. Outside of work, we still hang out like nothing's changed. I'm starting to feel taken advantage of, but the slights are subtle enough that I'm wondering if I'm imagining them. Do I confront her, or do I just quietly distance myself? Signed, Colleague, Not Competitor. Dear colleague, don't stew and don't retreat. Address it once, calmly and directly. Name the behavior that bothers you and don't attack her character. When my work isn't credited, it puts me in a difficult position. Then adjust. Copy your boss when appropriate and protect your contributions. You don't need to make an enemy. Just stop being an easy target. Dear Dr. Roach, this is To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. I was born in 1963, and from what I've read, people who were born between 1963 and 1965 may not have been immunized with a live virus for measles, therefore may not be immune whatsoever. I would like to be checked for immunity, but our local lab cost is between $142 and $225. From what I understand, it isn't covered by insurance. I live in a community that has had an outbreak, and I'm wondering if I should just pay the money to get tested. I have a grandbaby due in August, and see if I need the two-shot series or should I just get a booster. I also remember having German measles or rubella when I was in high school, probably around age 14, so I am worried that I don't have immunity. Please advise. Answer. If you aren't sure which measles vaccine you've had and you were born between 1963 and 1967, then I recommend getting two doses of the vaccine since you are in an outbreak setting. Most people will be immune and you can certainly be tested. I've never had a problem with getting the immunity test paid by insurance, but given the outbreak, the fastest way to get protected is to get vaccinated with the second dose separated by the first by at least 28 days. You've been listening to the Prescott Daily Courier, coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer programmer, Barbara Felix, thanking you so much for listening today, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. And now, stay tuned for more interesting programming coming your way from Sun Sounds of Arizona next.